Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their summer splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Saving money on protecting your garden. Now at Menards. Messina's Animal Stopper is a liquid repellent that prevents pesky animals from damaging your garden. Available in a convenient, ready-to-use bottle. It lasts for up to 30 days, regardless of weather and watering. Save big money on Messina's Animal Stopper at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
This is in a several thousand dollar tuxedo. Yeah, good.
Well, that's a George Kittle of the San Francisco 49ers. I'm not sure how wise that was.
Good. Good. This is what we need.
And look at McAfee. McAfee's got the official distracted in the ring. No idea that Kittle just took out this. Football players stick together, Corey. The way you and I should stick together.
Oh, George Kittle. George Kittle put the Miz on his ass. And Chris, first
Mike,
of all,
it's
good
fake.
Morning.
You know that, right, Mike? You know it's fake. Right?
I know it's okay. I know all it's right, fake. Right. But look, I was an aficionado of professional wrestling back when it was called studio wrestling. There was a time when they called it studio wrestling. I don't know if you know this.
I don't.
They called it studio wrestling because they actually did it in a TV studio. WIIC-TV in Pittsburgh was one of the bastions of studio wrestling. They had a ring. They had maybe two rows of seats
around
three sides of the ring.
Yeah.
And then they had the cameras, this darkened studio with just this perfunctory smattering of human beings. And they would go in there and they would do their thing. And I would submit to you that the sport has come a very long way than where it was in the early 70s.
Definitely.
When you're a kid and you're trying to learn like how grown-ups do things, and you know you're a boy and you're watching the men, and not that you want to be a fighter, but you know you got to defend yourself, you got to learn, you got to get tough. When your education on how men fight consists of every time you throw a punch, you stomp your foot on the ground to simulate the sound of the punch actually hitting.
Right.
You know, and it was one of those things where, wait a minute, I've watched boxing, and they don't stomp their foot on the ground when they hit each other. And it kind of looks like they actually are hitting each other in boxing. I don't know what this is, where it's this kind of glancing blow as they stomp their foot to distract us, so they're not really hitting them. And I say all that because George Kittle lit the Miz up. I mean, there is no denying that he hit him. The Miz took that. And even though it's scripted, even though it's not real, the physicality at times is real.
Yeah, sure.
And part of submitting to the sport now is you do get hit. You do get hit. George Kittle hits him. He puts him on his ass, and the Miz knows it's coming, and he turns right into it. And he fecks him up with that hit. He does.
Dude.
It's different than it was 50 years ago. And now watch McAfee. Do we have the rest of it? McAfee, who's 35 years old, I think, has had knee problems. He climbs up to the very top of that post, and he does this freaking thing that they call a swanton
bomb. Wow, that's unbelievable. That's unbelievable. I mean, that's gutsy. For a guy with that many gray hairs and doesn't look like he should be doing it anymore, that is pretty unbelievable.
you really could get hurt, even though it's fake,
definitely,
even though it's staged. And I remember when they finally dropped the facade and told the world it's fake, nobody cared. Like, I got to give credit to the average wrestling fan. They kind of knew. I remember my dad telling me it was fake when I was a kid, and I was getting so pissed at him. It's like, because deep down I know, but I don't need you telling me because I enjoy it. Why do you want to keep me from enjoying it? I know this isn't real, but I like it. So please, Dad, stop it. I remember being, that was the only time I was ever pissed at my dad in my entire life. Why do you keep telling me this is fake? So anyway, that was something. Then and here's how fake it is. When Pac-Man Jones was suspended by the NFL back in 2007, he signed with what was called Total Nonstop Action Wrestling. It was a wrestling bit that was on Spike TV. The Titans sued and got a court order keeping him from actually doing it, keeping him from doing anything other than being a spectator, because there is physicality.
Sure.
There are things you do that can get you hurt.
I bet. I mean, what McAfee did there, that was impressive, certainly. I mean, damn, you could hurt your knee, hurt your shoulder, whatever. I got respect.
Break your neck.
I got respect for the athletes. I do. I don't know. There was a point in my life, it was a little like yours, where my dad, I think he was the one that pointed it out to me a little bit. I got a little caught up in the Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant phase. That was right in my wheelhouse. But it did ring true kind of early, where I was like, well, this looks like a lot, you know, the stomping of the foot like you talked about and all the actions. And I don't know, I gave up on it pretty quickly. I didn't hang in there quite the same amount of time you did. I feel like 8 or 9, I was kind of like, I'd rather watch something else. But I can't say that, like, first off, respect. And I don't know where the hell that event was at, but it continues to sell out
SoFi
and be in the news. So
80,000 plus at
mad
SoFi
respect
Stadium.
For that. Mad respect, yeah.
More Rams and Chargers fans at that than there are at Rams
yeah,
and Chargers
right,
games.
Right.
So, and look, I remember the very first WrestleMania. This was WrestleMania 39, 2-day event, exclusively on Peacock for streaming options, unless you're one of the 80,000 plus who was there. The very first WrestleMania, it was available, and I think the first few, if you wanted to watch it live, remember closed circuit TV? You would pay to go to an arena or a theater, and you could watch it. This was like pre-satellite dish, pay $100 to watch it at home. You had to actually go to a place, and it would be televised in that place
right,
instead
right.
of in your home.
Yep.
And in Pittsburgh, because I was in college in Pittsburgh at the time, the closed circuit TV thing malfunctioned. So they actually, within a week or so after WrestleMania, televised WrestleMania for free on one of the Pittsburgh TV stations. And I remember it was like a big deal. You know, these nerds at Carnegie Mellon, me included, watching WrestleMania for free on TV. Somebody taped the thing, and we must have watched it 50 times. So we were into it. And I actually went 1 year and paid the ticket, like WrestleMania like, 2 or 3. I think
who were the stars
2.
At that time? Like who were you? Who was the guy? Who was the main attraction?
It was Hulk Hogan at first.
Okay, so he was there already. All right,
right. Hulk Hogan was really into like full bloom, and I think Mr. T was involved in the first WrestleMania.
Right.
I think like there was a Mr. T and Hulk Hogan tag team at some point.
You might be right. I think I remember that vaguely.
Roddy Piper. Yeah. Rowdy Piper was involved in those days. Andre the Giant. WrestleMania 3 that like packed the Silverdome. MDS from PFT went there as a kid. And I think it still has like an indelible mark on him. Andre the Giant versus Hulk Hogan. Randy the Macho Man. Oh, yeah. He was involved back then. So it was a big deal. It was a big deal.
I saw Macho Man Savage once in the airport. That was another reason I gave up on wrestling when I saw him. Like, it was the original one.
Why?
Because he was like 5'7" and like 150 something pounds, and I was like 12, and I was like, I think I'm bigger than him. I could take him. I'm not sure I can respect him anymore.
I was in the Pittsburgh airport in 1986.
Right.
Okay. And here comes Randy the Macho Man Savage. Wearing
the full outfit,
pink tank top,
right?
Pink tank top, blue jeans, no shoes, no socks, and a weightlifting belt. Not the belt they give you when you win.
The WWF
the old
belt, right?
Big the old big
leather,
gray,
right.
beige, the weightlifting belt that you put on, you know,
yeah,
backward
okay.
to support your back,
right?
And Miss Elizabeth, his manager slash wife at one point, was like walking 5 to 7 feet behind him. And they're walking through the Pittsburgh airport. 1986. Swear to God. And I mean, I didn't think I could take him. I know that.
I remember being like, man, it was built up in my brain, right? You're a young kid. Yeah. And I saw him in an airport, just like you, at the little convenience store in the airport. And I remember like going, damn, it was disappointing. I was a little disappointed. I was like, oh, man, he's not as big and strong as I thought he was. He doesn't look like Lawrence Taylor, Dad. See, my expectations were a little screwed up. So that's where it's a little messed up. Yeah.
I think LT was involved at some point.
He
was. The 80s.
Yeah.
That LT would not
Might
be involved
have been in the 90s,
like
actually.
That.
But yes, I think he was involved, right, at one point.
But with the Macho Man, I mean, he was larger than life, and they've done some. I think A&E has done some documentaries on the life, the biographies of some of these folks. And look, it's a lot of drugs, performance-enhancing drugs at one point. Oh, what a shock. I mean, how can you do all that stuff, right? How can you do – it was completely unregulated. Steroids were a big issue with professional wrestling because they're traveling the country. They're doing this all the time. They're even though back in those days, it wasn't quite as physically impressive.
It still was pretty damn good.
There's still a lot of stuff.
There was.
There's still a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
There's a clip where McAfee and the Miz are in the ring. And, man, I mean, McAfee kicks the guy in the face. I mean, it's not some fake kick. He puts his foot up, and the Miz runs right into it.
McAfee's an athlete. I mean, that's the one thing I don't think really people realize about kickers and punters in the NFL. I mean, McAfee made a name for himself a little bit because of his ability to run down and make tackles and be that kind of guy, which was different. He was a little more into it than the normal, punter kicker guy. But, man, the athleticism of some of the guys that I was around through my career, I mean, it's top-notch. I mean, top-notch. You know, guys like Dustin Colquitt and Tom Tupa, who I was around before. I'm probably missing a few others where I'd go – No, those guys are like, they can do anything. You know, they might have not been like, middle linebacker tough or whatever, but throwing, jumping, running, anything like that, man, kickers and punters is a reason they can kick the ball like that. They got legs that are extremely athletic and pretty explosive.
Who's the guy from the Broncos? McAfee blew up. Oh, I can't remember the name of the punt return. It was a kickoff return.
Yeah.
Holiday.
Trenton Holiday. It was.
Last name
it was
Holiday.
Trenton Holiday.
Blew him. I mean,
right. That's where he came on
up.
The
it was
scene.
A punt return.
Right.
Blew him up. Now Trenton Holiday was 5'5", 170, but still, you have to have the athleticism. One of the fastest guys on the field, one of the most agile players in the game, you get over to him and you blow him up. He blew him up. So, yeah, you're right. You don't just roll out of bed and punt the ball like these guys do. It's one of the weapons in the arsenal of a great athlete.
That's
kicking
right.
it that far
right.
and punting it that far, and it just becomes your specialty, and everything's specialized in sports
it.
Now,
right.
and
right.
that's the thing that you can do until you retire and you become a professional wrestler. But, yeah, I mean, look, I injured my hip rolling out of bed on Saturday.
Damn, old man River. Damn, old man River.
Yeah.
What'd you do? What'd you do there? Hippieotomy.
I rolled out of bed.
Happy April's 1st.
I think I'm at the age. Yeah, it was on April 1st too. Son of a gun. I'm at the age where I'm bracing myself for any physical calamity that may come. Am I going to fall down the steps again? Is my lower back going to start killing me out of the blue again? And I think my mattress is too soft. I think I need a firmer mattress.
Yeah, has to happen.
I sink down into
right.
it. Yeah, and I've been noticing, like, I've had pain around my lower back when I get out of bed, but it goes away. And some days it doesn't happen, and some days it does, and it usually goes away. So I lay down Saturday afternoon for an hour and a half because that's what I do. And when I get up, I roll out of bed, and I can't walk. I got like a sword jammed into my ass right above my right hip. And so I've been dealing with that for the past 2 days. Thank you very much. And I mean, I wake up in the middle of the night and I try to change positions. And I feel like that sword is jamming right into my ass. So welcome to
Monday morning at PFT. Swords are jamming in our asses here. Great to see you today.
We apparently have video of LT from WrestleMania.
Oh, yeah.
In the 90s. Is it 95? Do we have?
I was going to say, I thought it was right after he retired.
There's
I thought
LT.
He had just gotten
That's,
out.
I believe that is Bam Bam Bigelow.
It is Bam Bam Bigelow. That. I think you're right. You're too old to know these many people in wrestling, but yes, you are right.
What do you mean I'm too old to know? Look, he's on the second rope. Go all the way to
look at there's Bam Reggie Bam. White in the background. Remember, there was a few defensive linemen they had involved in it. I see
LT.
LT
takes out Bam Bam Bigelow. Wow. That may have been. You know, they do that Royal Rumble where they have all those guys in the ring. I don't know if that was part of it. Remember, they put like 30 guys in the ring, and the last man standing is the winner.
Yeah, right.
I wonder if that's what that was.
I think you might be right. That might be
what
it is.
That was a Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
LT. All right. And all of the old WrestleManias are on Peacock. I'm not just saying that because our bread gets buttered by Peacock partially, but all of the old WrestleManias are on Peacock. When they first got them a couple of years ago, I started watching them. I lost track. 7 or 8 in, but I was watching them. I mean, it's great nostalgia for the 80s because I was into it in the 70s, rediscovered it in the 80s, and then by 87 or 88, I was done.
All right, good. You matured at some point is what you're telling me. Glad to hear that that happened eventually in the late 80s.
It's extremely popular.
I know. I know. It really still is. I know it is. And like I said, I got mad respect for what they're doing. Am I tuning in on a Sunday to watch it? No, that's not happening right now, but still mad respect. I know it's a great spectacle. I'm glad they had a good show. George Kittle looked good. He looked ripped. He looked shredded. Good show.
Did you – oh, and I figure when he's done playing, that just – he'll be drawn to that like a magnet.
Right.
Pro wrestling.
Yeah.
I mean, that the gregarious personality. And that's really a big part of it. Oh, when we were in Kansas City for the – and I think I talked about this. A couple of people connected to pro wrestling – came onto the bus that we were using for the playoff game.
Right.
And I don't follow it closely enough to know who they are. Extremely nice, friendly, down to earth. You would never know they were in some kind of show business. And I feel bad because I think they're like big, big wrestling stars. And I'm right. Okay. But then when they were on the show, they had transformed into their personas. And I mean, it's unlimited energy. It's great personality. And that's a big part of being successful in that world.
Right.
You got to be able to grab that microphone
and be a psycho.
You got to be able to talk some shit.
Yeah.
And you got to be entertaining that way.
Right.
And these folks transformed. And that's the thing. You can't live with that energy all the time when they expect you to hype people up. But that is a big part of it. The ability to talk, the ability to really get people riled up, get yourself riled up. And you got to sell that.
Hey, the biggest star in the world.
Fake, you got to come up with something to sell it.
WWE. Right? The Rock, Dwayne Johnson. I mean, gosh, it tells you what kind of personalities they're breeding there, and what you have to be. I mean, he's number one guy. You turn on a movie, action movie, is The Rock, and that's because of his WWE background.
And it was, I believe, I'm still trying to figure this out, and I know we got to get on to more important things.
Yes,
but this actually ties into something we're doing later. There's not a whole lot going on, so bear with me here. My butt hurts. My hip hurts. Let me have some fun. I've been dealing with this pain for 2 days. I'm actually having a good time right now. The women's basketball championship yesterday, Angel Reese from LSU, the things she did to Caitlin Clark that Caitlin Clark also does that people forget about now that they want to crap on Angel Reese. They don't know that she does that too. That's a John Cena thing from pro wrestling.
Yeah, you can't see me.
WWE's everywhere this weekend.
Right.
You can't see me.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And let me just say this, because our draft later is the best taunts all time in the NFL, inspired by Angel Reese. The one comment I'll make about this, because I Twitter lost its freaking mind, and the people most upset about Angel Reese talking shit on the court are the people who talk the most shit on Twitter all the time. Like, why do you have a problem with somebody being the way that you are all the time? I'm not going to name names, but the people who are most upset are the people who go on Twitter and talk shit all the time.
Yeah, well, that's status quo for where we are right now because of social media. Yeah. That sounds pretty familiar.
You still have your blue check? Do you still have your blue check, by the way?
Nor do I ever care. Now's our chance. Screw Twitter. Let's get out now while we can, the whole country, and be healthier and safer and better. Screw over Elon Musk. It could be a great day. I mean, it could be a great thing. Great.
Here we go. Well, now our blue checks will be gone. I never asked for a blue check. They gave it to me years ago. Okay, fine, blue check, whatever. And now he's going to take it away April 1 comes and goes, and it's not there.
YeI want to put blue checks on Teslas that, like, you know, work and don't work, right? Because I've got a lot of experience with his Teslas, and some of them aren't blue check worthy. So he could kiss my ass, okay? I can tell you that. All right?
Let me say this. This is taking a turn.
Worried about SpaceX. Worry about your damn car company that doesn't work. Your horrible customer service, Elon. Horrible.
I think he's learning that nobody's paying $8 a month for the.
I hope not. It was awesome that Mahomes and LeBron started this whole thing, and it just became an awesome thing where everybody was like, "Yeah, screw Twitter and their check." Yeah,
Patrick Mahomes is making $45 million a year. Said, "I'm not going to pay the $8 a month.
I got kids.
I have kids.
I love it."
All right, let's get to it. Brock Purdy may soon have the kind of money where he can flex and say he's not going to pay $8 a month for his blue check on Twitter, but before he can have the kind of career that it appeared he was on track for, he's got to get this elbow right. Here's Brock Purdy talking about the timeline for his elbow and if he feels more pressure going into season number two. This comes from Fox Sports 910 AM. Here's Brock Purdy.
Yeah, I mean, the protocol is you start throwing at 3 months, but it all depends on how your, you know, therapy and your range of motion and everything goes up until that point. So there's definitely some boxes I have to check off first until I get to that point, but that's the plan as of now.
Your coaches come out and basically said you're the starter, it's your job to lose. Do you feel any extra pressure because of that or not?
No, sir. It's just, you know, for me, it's I have to get healthy first. You know, that's how I'm looking at it day by day, is I have to get healthy. Everything will fall into place from there. Other than that, man, I love my teammates. I love to compete, and I'm going to do whatever it takes to help, you know, this organization win. And, you know, that's how I'm looking at it, and nothing more than that.
You know, I never really thought of it before, but when it comes to the quarterback position in recent years, the 49ers,
they're cursed. They're cursed. It's hilarious you're going to say that. I was just about to say the same thing. Yeah.
I'm letting you talk. Go.
Okay. Yeah, but you're right. They are. I'm sorry. I thought you were going to finish your sentence there, thought. No, I mean, it is unbelievable what they've gone through, and the fact that they've been towards the top of the mountain throughout this whole, you know, scenario of all these different quarterbacks and whatever else, it speaks to the team they've built. It speaks to Lynch and Shanahan, that's for sure. But, man, yeah, this little one piece here has been – a difference in them maybe not winning a Super Bowl, getting back to another Super Bowl. Yeah, unfortunate with injury here, but hey, the year before against the Rams, Garoppolo didn't play good at the end of the game. They lost. That, you could certainly blame it on that. The Super Bowl, like you've talked about, some plays there, you know, that were easy or there to be had for a big-time quarterback, didn't make it happen. So, yeah, it's crazy that they're back in this boat, Mike. I mean, what are we talking about? 3 months, April, May, June, early July. He's hoping he can start throwing a football. You know, I have a hard time thinking he's going to be able to throw a football at the capacity or the level that he needs to go like, oh, wow, we're carving up a high-functioning 49ers defense here in training camp. So, you know, all he can do is kind of focus on that right now. It stinks for him. I feel for him. But he's got to get that right. And that's going to be a process, and it's going to be a pain in the butt. And you know, 3 months is being, I think, very hopeful with that type of injury.
We got the impression last week from some of the things said at the league meetings by John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan that but for this injury, Brock Purdy is entrenched number one.
Yes,
he's
right.
He's earned the job. He's won the job. He's just got to recover from this elbow. And if he doesn't, it's Sam Darnold, Trey Lance. And it very well could be that Trey Lance isn't competing with Brock Purdy. He's competing with Sam Darnold to be number two. And I think Trey Lance could be available if there's somebody out there who wants him.
Yeah.
But we know from how the 49ers handled Jimmy Garoppolo, they're probably going to want a lot for Trey Lance. They're going to want a lot for Trey Lance because they're going to want to save some face because of everything they gave up to get him. And look, you know, we rewind the clock to 2021. Trey Lance was one of the top prospects. So there's got to be some other coach/GM out there that thinks if we just get Trey Lance in our system without all this dysfunction, this Jimmy Garoppolo thing, and do they really believe in Trey Lance? Are they really giving him a chance? Is it too much pressure on him? We give him a fresh start. We let him hit the reset button. He could be good with us, but I don't know that that means somebody's given up a first-round pick.
Yeah, no way. right.
Trey Lance.
Right. I don't think that. I don't think we can have that conversation yet. I mean, hey, I mean, Trey Lance, you're saying it right. I wouldn't be shocked, right? But and are there teams out there that would be interested in him that we know were interested the first time around when he was coming out in the draft? Sure. But things have changed, right? I mean, how are you going to sell on your fan base right now? You know, so that's where it is, Mike. I think we're on the right trajectory here. It's just like, what would he get on an open market or a trade market? You know, you're not going to be able to sell to your fan base, right? Hey, we're bringing in Trey Lance to be our guy. We know he's still a project. We know he still hasn't really played football in 3 years now. So that's where the value of him gets hurt, too. You know, that was the thing that we all worried about when he came out in the draft. Excuse me, I'm drooling on myself. And then here we are a few years later, and that department hasn't really improved much, let alone we got to see it in training camp and the start of last year, and it looked like that to our eyes, so much to the point that the head coach of the team who wanted to get rid of the quarterback in Jimmy Garoppolo went, damn, I want to get rid of this guy, but I can't, and we're just going to keep him here because I don't like the way Trey Lance looks. So that's where I don't know realistically what they could get or if a team could even, like, sell that, you know, to their fan base at this point. That would be the interesting thing to me there, Mike.
And here's another reason to keep Trey Lance if you're the 49ers. You are cursed.
You
trade Trey Lance, and all of a sudden, Purdy can't go, and Sam Darnold gets injured.
Exactly.
And then where are you?
Right.
Hey, I'm telling you, and I know people are going to get mad at me, as if that ever stopped me. I'm telling you, at some level, there's at least partial consideration being given to the ultimate pulling of the ripcord this year, which would be bring Tom Brady in. I can't imagine that's not on the radar screen. They regret passing on him in the past, and Brady at this point believes he's done. I don't believe he's going to continue to believe he's done, and I think he's going to be, whether he admits it to anyone or not, he's going to be looking around, and if somehow, some way, the clouds part and the opportunity arises to go back to the 49ers and play there. We saw that video that was just kind of accidentally and spontaneously taped last week with no planning, no production, no filming, no editing. It just kind of happened, like the old video of Sasquatch walking through the woods. It just kind of happened, of Tom Brady playing beach football with his buddies. The guy's still in football shape.
Yeah.
He's good to go.
Right.
And I think he's going to stay that way. He's going to keep his mouth shut. He's going to keep eating avocado ice cream. He's going to continue to be ready to go, and we'll see. And I think it's a small chance that it happens, but we've seen crazy stuff. Who would ever believe Brock Purdy becomes the starting quarterback and looks like a guy who could take the team to the Super Bowl? So we have to be ready for anything and everything. And one of the things we have to be ready for is the possibility, slim as it may be, of Purdy not healthy, Darnold doesn't get it done, they still don't believe in Trey Lance. Hey, Tom Brady, please come home and save us.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they like Purdy. We know that. If the one thing Shanahan's always said to me about Purdy, right, that always sticks out, is just his natural feel for the game. He knows how to play. You know, he just has a great feel of like, ooh, let me slide here and I got to drop my arm. Fine. Bam. Oh, wait, I was supposed to look over here, but pressure took me away and I found a completion here and just in the natural flow of the game. He's not a robot. He might not wow you, but he knows how to take coaching. He listens. And then he's got a feel to where just to get it done. And it might not always be the prettiest or sexiest, but it can get it done. Now, saying all that, and then what you just said right there, I mean, yeah, the time's now. I mean, the time's now. It is. I think Shanahan would get on Brady right now if Brady gave him an inkling and said, hey, I'm ready to go. And ready? I mean, Tom Brady, it's ready now. This is the opportunity. If he wanted to do it and go to the 49ers, it's ready. I think it makes sense. I think Shanahan would do it. You know, what? He's got a team. It's a Super Bowl team. It's arguably the best roster in football, especially now that the Philadelphia Eagles have lost some players, right? They're ready, you know. What? So Brady can go in there and take over. I mean, I hear you. I don't know if it's going to happen either, but if it's going to happen, it's going to happen right there on that team. That's what I do believe. And, you know, I don't know where Brady seems pretty steadfast on, hey, I'm going to be a dad and I'm turning the page in life, but – yeah, let's give it another month or so. Let's see how itchy he gets here, right? Let's see if the 49ers get itchy. Let's see if Shanahan starts to get itchy and starts to go, damn, I don't really like the way practice looked today with Darnold and Trey Lance, and let's call Brady and just see what's going on. I mean, I don't think any of that's far-fetched, Mike. I hear you there.
Brady's got the ultimate cover for changing his mind. I've said this many times the past few weeks. George Costanza's justification for lying was, it's not a lie if you believe it. Tom Brady's is, I believed it when I said it. It's a very powerful thing. I believed it when I said it. When I said I'll retire when I suck, I believed it because I'm retiring before I suck. I believed it when I said it. I said I was done. I believed it when I said it because people do change their minds. I remember Brett Favre 15 years ago on David Letterman, late April. That was the moment that I realized this guy's coming back because he said when training camp rolls around, I don't know how I'm going to feel. I don't know how I'm going to feel. And I think deep down Brady knows he doesn't know how he's going to feel, knowing number one, he can still play. Number two, he's said multiple times over the past couple of months how much he loves football more than anything, right? And then number three, he's never been in that position where the train is leaving the station without him.
Yep.
And it's not yet. The train is sitting in the station. People are getting on. There's talk about the train. Hey, you know, the train's going to be leaving the station at some point, but it's still here for a while. At some point, you know, they're going to blow the whistle, and they're going to fire up the engine, and it's going to start how and that's when it's speak now, forever hold your peace. Or he can try to catch up with the train later and jump on it somewhere during the season. That's possible too. But this is something he has no idea how he's going to feel because he's never done it before. And you've talked before about what it feels like that first year when you're not playing. And you didn't play 20-plus years.
Right.
Can you imagine, Chris, what he's going to be going through this season when the world of football moves on without him and doesn't even blink?
No, I mean, I can imagine a little. I mean, yeah, because of me, right? But because I lived with a guy that played for 15 years, and then I was there in year 16 where – he was going crazy, and he was stir crazy. And I was in eighth grade, and I couldn't play football that year because I was too big. I had to lose like 10 pounds to play offensive line. So I caught passes for Big Phil. That's what I did that year. We'd go over to the field, and he almost signed with Belichick and the Browns. He almost signed with Tom Coughlin and the Jacksonville Jaguars. So we had a few little run-ins there. It is. It's hard to put it away. It's these are guys that have addictive personalities as it is. And his addiction is football and that competition. So, yeah, Mike, you bring up all the right points. I'm with you there. I mean, I think it's over, but I got to see it to believe it. And it's got to be the start of training camp and maybe even a few days in before I start to go, okay, I think he's not coming back. It's official. But it won't be until then, until I totally close the book on that situation. And of all the situations, the place that he grew up, his favorite team, has a situation where it's like literally, hey, here's the bat signal. We just need you to come in here and execute an offense. We're awesome. You don't even have to be that awesome. You could come in here and we can win a Super Bowl. I mean, Mike, I hear you, man. I really do. I'm not going to say it's dead until it's dead.
By the way, I'd have loved to have seen Phil in a wrestling ring. That would have been something.
It would have.
Because he's a very large human. Appreciate it until you get him around other large humans. And I thought of him on Friday night because I've been bringing a couple of my nephews over and we'll watch like some classic old movies they've never seen.
Right.
It's just not even on their radar screen. And we watched the movie featuring the Big Fecker. You're a Big Fecker. Where'd you come from?
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, the Green Mile.
The Green Mile.
Yeah. I almost texted you when that. I almost took a picture
of the
moment that he comes out of nowhere and wipes out Wild Bill.
Well, hey,
let me tell you, that is one hell of a movie.
I had not
sat down and watched it start to finish since I saw it in the theaters in 1999 because it's streaming and it's on and you'll watch it. To sit down and be engrossed in that for 3 hours, that is one of the all-time most underrated movies.
Classic.
I think it's been made.
Agreed. It's an amazing movie. It really is. And yes, that is where the big effort came from right there. That movie is where the scene started. And the big effort, he would have liked that. You should have took a picture real quick about him. So Saturday night, he comes over with my mom. You know, they're great at coming over on a Saturday, and they come over late in the afternoon, eat some dinner. Well, it's April Fool's, and I have a daughter who was dying to get him, right? So we eat dinner, we're sitting on the couch, we're kind of relaxed, whatever. And my little girl, who's not little anymore, she's 5'8 and 16 years old, she, oh my gosh, there's a coyote. She made my dog bark and then acted like there was a coyote outside. And you should have saw Big Phil lose his crap.
Holly, get him in here. Get the dog. He ran to the yard. Bentley, get in here. You know, he was going crazy. And then we turned around, and my daughter was laughing. She got me. She sold it so good. So the big effort got April Fools in a big way there. Yeah.
I'm surprised he didn't, like, rip off his shirt and go out there and get ready to
He was ready to run out there. And I said, Dad, he was getting the dog. I was like, Dad, this is why we got the dog. Let him go. Just let him. He'll be back in a minute. Hold on. Let him chase him off. But then we saw my daughter giggling. So that was a good one.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
The Premier League is built on hope. The hope of discovering a new star.
It doesn't take long.
The hope of rewriting history.
He's calling
and the hope of continuing a dynasty.
Unstoppable week after week.
This is the Premier League on NBC, USA, and Peacock.
For the world's greatest athletes,
this is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again!
Goal for the States. Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics, this summer on NBC and streaming on Peacock.
You know, this is one of those days where Courtney, who worked so hard to put together...
I know, we screwed it all up.
We're going to discuss. Major surgery is being done to the outline. Things are being crossed out and thrown away. You guys talked about this last week, right? We don't need to talk about it now. Yeah, let's move on. Here's something we didn't talk about last week. And this is one of the things that kind of slipped in the cracks with the league meetings, because we spent so much time talking about Robert Kraft's comments about Bill Belichick and Bill Belichick and the whole check the last 25 years. And then he had to walk that back and clarify it, because guys like Teddy Bruschi said, hey, wait a minute. This is completely antithetical to everything that Bill Belichick ever told us. You never talk about the past. You only talk about the future. One thing about the future Bill Belichick discussed, the quarterback situation between Mac Jones and Bailey Zappi.
Right.
Here is Belichick on whether they are competing for the QB1 honors in New England.
Would it be fair to say that both Mac and Bailey Zappi will be competing for the starting job over the summer, or is it Mac's job?
Yeah, well, everybody get a chance to play. We'll play the best players.
So it's still kind of a competition.
Everybody will get a chance to play.
That's even more than a competition. Everybody will get a chance to play. Chance to play. You can say it's competition to see who gets on the field, or you can say we're going to put them both on the field and see what happens. They were toying with that last year. Remember that?
Right.
Was that the
Bears
game?
That
Bears game that they lost? Yeah.
Right.
It's Zappi and it's Mac, and it's Zappi and it's Mac, and are they going to play them both, and when are they bringing them back? And there still is an undercurrent of hostility and animosity between Mac Jones and Bill Belichick that doesn't get discussed enough, but it's there. And it exploded during the season behind the scenes quietly between Mac and Belichick. And I think that there's some affinity from ownership toward Mac Jones, which complicates things. But look, imagine I run any quarterback questions posed to Bill Belichick through the filter of how would he have handled that question when Tom Brady was the starter. He never would have answered it that way when it was Tom Brady and Brian Hoyer. I guarantee you that.
No.
So it's indicative that they don't know who their guy is. And that causes some to say, why aren't they making a move for Lamar Jackson? Because he'd clearly be better than both. Well, they're not making a move for Lamar Jackson, so it doesn't matter.
No.
It's going to be Mac Jones. It's going to be Bailey Zappi. And, Chris, look at that roster. Look at the other teams in the division.
Yeah. Yeah, there are.
If I'm ranking 1, 2, 3, 4, they're number 4 right now in the AFC East.
Yeah, I hear that. It's. I mean, we know the Jets-Dolphins rosters are as good as it gets in football. The Bills, I mean, it's, of course, incredibly good as well. So, yeah, I hear you. It's right there, I guess, with the Bills, I would say, as far as that. But yeah, I think if I had to probably say it, I might say it's fourth as well. All right, and you said it right. I mean, we both know there's some issues there with Mac and Bill Belichick. There's something there. We've heard from too many people, right? And it goes back to the offseason or last training camp and all of that. But you know, I think ultimately, like, they know who their starting quarterback is. I do think they know it's Mac Jones. I just think, like, Mike, he's Bill Belichick, the school of coaching he's from, the way they played last year. He's not, unless you're Tom Brady or Lawrence Taylor or somebody, you're nobody. It's compete and get your ass ready for the year this year. No one's getting the red carpet treatment there in New England. No one showed that they're that good that they just get to go. He's going to keep everybody on edge. I would imagine. It's a big year for Bill Belichick. You know, like you talked about last week, talking about Kraft, would he fire him if they don't make the playoffs, all those things. He understands what's going on. He hears what's going on there in New England. So he ain't into let me make Mac feel real cozy and warm right now on April 1st. He's hoping Mac is stressing out and working his ass off because he's worried Bailey Zappe might be the starter. And that's what he wants. And I think he'll push those buttons with Mac and this team right now because they're not, you know, a Brady team in 2016 that we know is on the precipice of being one of the best teams in football.
And I think things went sideways for Bill Belichick and Mac Jones with this whole experiment.
Yeah, definitely.
Robert Kraft
right?
called it last
right.
week of making Matt Patricia the offensive coordinator, and Matt Patricia had never coached offense his entire life. He'd been a head coach, but he's not an offensive expert. And yeah, it worked for Bill Belichick, and it's worked for other guys who have figured out both sides of the ball. But last year proved how hard it is. You can be a brilliant defensive mind. You can be a brilliant mind in any other aspect, but all of a sudden to figure out how to run an offense just like that, and Mac Jones is the guy whose career is affected by the fact that they go from Josh McDaniels to Matt Patricia with a little help from Joe Judge, another guy who was never an offensive coach here. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And I think that's what started it. And by the end of the season, what are we seeing? We're seeing Mac Jones visibly dropping F-bombs, yelling and screaming, upset all the time, because he's the guy who's caught in the middle of this mess. And so there, very well.
Throw the effing ball.
There it is. Yeah. Yeah. So I can understand why he's upset. I can understand why Bill is trying to maybe urge him to play a little bit better, because right now, Josh Allen, Tua Tagovailoa, Aaron Rodgers, Mac Jones. Mac Jones is fourth. Mac Jones is clearly fourth. Hear me, Tua and on? Mac Jones is clearly fourth behind Tua and Josh Allen and Aaron Rodgers in the AFC East. There's no doubt about that.
No.
You know, it occurred to me, Chris, if anybody should be calling Tom Brady, it should be the Patriots. Number one, Brady right now is better than what they have, and that would be something to at least placate the fans. Bring back Tom Brady for one last year. Go see Tom Brady in a Patriots uniform one last time. That may be the ultimate distraction to the fact that we're not very good. And I think Brady wouldn't want anything to do with it for the simple reason that the team isn't very good right now.
No, that's not going to be the team he picks. I mean, like we talked about, if he's coming back, he's going to a team that's ready, can win it. Like we joked about a little, you know, I think early in the offseason, where we were like, he's not going to pick some team and go, well, I think we can get to the wild card game, right? I mean, he's going like, can this team win the Super Bowl? If they can, screw you, you're off my list. So that's not New England, as you're saying. You're right in that. Yeah, they're a team here that's in transition, trying to find their identity. You know, I don't even know how to explain it. Yeah, they've lost their great leader in Tom Brady, you know, and the offensive coordinator thing in McDaniels and his leadership on the offensive side of the ball. He leaves. It's kind of a double whammy. It's a lot they've had to overcome the last few years. And then to make a mistake like you talked about, to have two guys that are good coaches but just not ready to coach offensive side of the ball and come up with game plans. Of course, Mac Jones must have been frustrated. And that's what I heard, right? Well, I think I said that in early in the season that he had called Alabama and certain coaches going, hey, can you give some ideas to our coaches? Well, I mean, come on, all of us who pay attention to football, how do you think that's going to go over with New England people if they heard that was happening, right? So I understand him being frustrated because he's going, wait, at Alabama and when I got to New England, my offense was way better then than it is right now, and here I am in the second year of my NFL career, and I'm sure he was frustrated. But I don't know if calling Alabama – where the head coach is an ex-assistant of your head coach.
It's
going to get back, right? Exactly. That's where he went wrong.
Well, and Nick Saban, the head coach, is going to catch wind of it, and he and Belichick are tight.
Exactly.
Can you imagine the fun that Saban had telling Belichick that he can't control his guys to the point where they're calling college programs for help? And that I hadn't heard that before today, but there's other stuff I've heard that it's just dysfunctional. For the first time ever under Bill Belichick, the Patriots feel dysfunctional, and I don't know that they can do enough in one off season, especially because we've come a very long way from the days when they ran that division. And I don't want to take away anything from what they accomplished, but it's a hell of a lot easier to get to the AFC Championship game every year when you run roughshod over three bad teams in your division. You emerge from that with the one seed or the two seed, and all you have to do is win a home playoff game, and you're in the AFC Championship. Because remember, up until a couple of years ago, the top two teams got wild card round off and hosted that divisional round game. You win, you get one of the top two seeds because everybody else in your division is horrible, in part. I don't want to take anything away from the stuff they did beyond their division, but it helps when the rest of your division is horrible and you don't go 3-3 or 2-4 in your division.
Right.
You go 5-1 or 6-0, and then you win a home playoff game and you punch your ticket to the AFC Championship. And some years you get to the Super Bowl, some years you win the Super Bowl. But it is easy. If you can get the planets to align in a way that your team is really good and the other three teams in your division are really bad, it isn't all that hard to get to the conference championship game on a regular basis.
No. It's kind of the under, you know, and I don't mean it to be disrespectful. It's kind of the under-the-radar aspect of, I think, the 49ers and the Patriots dynasty to a degree. The fact that they, you know, you laid it out right. You know, those six games, you had to know that, hey, wait, okay, not only, like, do we know these teams, but we're clearly better, and we don't have to, like, physically kill ourselves to come out and win these games like some other teams do in other conferences, right? And I think there is something to that. And I used to sit there, like I'd said, we've talked about this before, in the 80s with the Giants football team having to play Washington and Philadelphia and the Cowboys, and then – you know, whoa, we got to get in the playoffs. And it's like, well, yeah, it's been the playoffs for you guys in the NFC East for like the last 7-8 weeks here. And now you got to get, you know, more car crashes in physical football. Yeah, the 49ers, of course, you know, had a little bit of an advantage that way. Yeah, and the Patriots did too, certainly. But it's not that way anymore. Tides have turned, and that's why we're talking about it. It's a big year with Belichick because it's the first time ever, like you said, where we're going, dysfunction, I don't know if they can just overcome it with Belichick magic and all this type of stuff. And we haven't had these questions in a long time up in New England.
There was a period of time where, they had the Falcons, the Saints, and the Rams as their competition. The 49ers did.
Yeah.
Through the 80s, that's six wins a year you could count on. I'm looking at the records. Those teams were all sub 500 for the most part. The Rams every once in a while
would pop up.
Competitive.
Right.
But the 49ers owned that division just like the Patriots did. So a lot of questions in New England, and we ended up getting to more than I thought we would. We did. We were going to talk about the Falcons and Desmond Ridder a little bit. It was off, then it was on, then it was off, then it was on. Now it's off. We'll talk more about the Falcons at some point. But the bottom line is they're all in with Desmond Ridder, not Lamar Jackson. We haven't talked much about Lamar Jackson today. We're at the point where we're just waiting until after the draft, I think, because it's clear that no one's making a run at him before the draft. And I don't know whether anyone's going to make a run at him after the draft, but we'll see. Let's take a break. We are in draft month. Chris has ranked his top cornerbacks. Cornerbacks, we already done quarterbacks. These are the cornerbacks. We'll look at Chris's top corners when PFT Live continues right after this.